Jill Wolf, 35 years old. Today's March 31st, 2015. We are at the Chicago Cultural Center, and my relationship to Dan is my friend and advocate.
I am Dan Morley, 63 years old. Today is March 31st, 2015, and we are at the Chicago Cultural Center. My relationship to Jill is a good friend.
Dan and Sharon, thank you both for being here. I'm going to ask, can we both or all of us just take a deep breath and kind of just center ourselves to right here? I'm thrilled you're here. And I'm going to first ask, how are you feeling right now?
I feel excited.
Feel excited?
Yes.
How'd you feel about, say, 2 months ago on February 2nd, 2015?
I actually didn't have any feeling that day.
No feelings?
No feeling. I more or less wanted to try to empty my mind and not to complicate things and let things happen the way they're supposed to.
So this was a purposeful effort to not have feeling.
Right.
On your part.
Yes. And happening so fast, it was I didn't have time to think.
So what was it that you were preparing for? That you didn't even want to think about to even have emotion for?
Liver transplant.
Liver transplant.
Yes.
And how do you feel today?
I feel like I'm blessed today.
Blessed today?
Yes.
And what does that mean? Tell me.
Well, I have a new life. The liver transplant was successful as of today. My liver functions are good. All my labs are excellent. And I feel blessed. I feel like I had another opportunity to a new life.
Sharon, as Dan's partner in crime in a few different ways, what does it feel like? What were you feeling on February 2nd, 2015? Were you empty of emotion?
I'm a whole gamut of emotion. But he was really calm, which was good. And I think we'd had a couple weeks prior had to go in. He was the backup liver, so we experienced 30 hours of what it might have been like, and then at the last minute they were told that they'd given the liver to someone else. But all the people who came in and talked to us and tried to reassure us, especially me, what he would look like when he came out of surgery, that not knowing would have been so much different than knowing. Because all those things happened, and it was a real blessing that we were there with that team, because all the way through, even the surgeon was just so reassuring. And so she even made a joke that she'd been practicing, because she had a surgery right before Dan got there, and she said, "I've been practicing for you, Danny." And it was a long night, but it was. I won't say pleasant, but it was peaceful in that, I didn't have that anxiety because there were so many people there that, helped me through it, supported me, I'm not a big fan of the internet and Facebook and all that jazz, but it was very nice having it because I couldn't leave, and yet people were sending love and support. Encouragement. So
you mentioned 30-hour, you had an opportunity to have a transplant that didn't work out. And you mentioned 30-hour preparation. I would say the average human, maybe the non-average human, would have no clue what kind of preparation you're talking about. Could you give us an insight from, obviously you'd be a patient perspective and you'd be a caregiver perspective. What is this 30 hours we're talking about?
A lot of waiting. As far as my participation, all the doctors and nurses that were coming in and giving me care and setting me up for a possible surgery was kind of overwhelming. There's a lot of things they do, and I'm very grateful for what they do. But not experiencing anything like that before, it was... It was a little bit overwhelming on everything they have to do. So in the meantime, all the procedures, all the IVs, and all the information that they give you to prepare you for this, but the majority of the time was just waiting. just waiting.
And why did you need a liver transplant?
I have developed liver cancer on December of 2013.
That's when you found out?
That's when I found out, yes.
What was it like to hear that?
It wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
I was going to Northwestern to treat my hepatitis C, and the hepatologist at the time wanted to do an MRI before we got started with the medication. And when they did that MRI, they found a 2-centimeter tumor on my liver. So the same day after having the MRI, I went home, and the same night the hepatologist called me on the phone and told me that I had cancer, and I was devastated. I didn't expect anything like that. I felt good. I didn't feel sick. Even with the hepatitis that I had all those years, I never felt any discomfort. Everything was normal. I was a little fatigued, and maybe that was one of the reasons I prompted myself into getting care. But when he told me I had cancer, and especially over the phone, it was like, I'm dreaming, you know, it was just not right. There's something's wrong. And that's the way he left it. So so obviously, in the meantime, I had to find treatment. And that's when I transferred to Loyola.
Where you had your treatment for your hepatitis C and your liver cancer at this point.
Yes. Yes. It's, I was going to Northwestern, but then due to insurance complications, I transferred to Loyola. And so that's where they started my procedure.
And can you speak a little bit about the impact on whether it be hepatitis C, whether it be liver cancer, whether it be liver transplant, on your relationship as a married partnership, as a family? What would you say the impact has been? How have you felt it as a unit?
Well, you generally don't look at those things. You know, when you're living together as a husband and wife, you generally don't look at that. You kind of take things for granted sometimes, that my wife is always going to be there, and you never take for granted what she goes through as far as a spouse, and especially the post-surgery and care that she has to give, because when I came home, all the hours of caring and all the hours of worrying, and sure, it's got to be devastating, but you don't think of those things. You just do what you have to do.
How about you, Sharon?
Well, I believe that, you know, there's divine intervention through this entire process, and I'm the one that's going to get emotional here. But I just feel everything, you know, you don't want to hear this saying, everything happens for a reason, but we've been in the right spots in our lives, and we've met the right people, and, you know, we've given of ourselves to people that we feel could benefit from the message that we've learned. I would have never made it through without the information that the Loyola team gave us and their support, as well as just our gratitude for the blessings we have in our life. You know, the breathing, the meditation, you know, the mindfulness of, you know, we did this. I'm here instead of back there worrying about it, you know. I did this. We did this, you know, and just the gratitude, because all my fears did not, you know, those fears, because you don't know, they didn't happen. You know, I got from here to there. We got from the hospital home and back with the puppies. And, mm-hmm. you know, our life has gone on. And, you know, like Dan said, you know, sometimes there's little setbacks on a day. But, you know, it's unbelievable that we're where we are today and what we've gone through to get to there. You know, it's a blessing, you know. And I feel like as far as, it's just a coincidence that the, you know, days before, when we have the knowledge, we hear something on the TV and we'll go, that's not how it goes. That's not how you go through to get a transplant. That's, you know, the Hep C thing is now it's on commercials where it never was before. And this is on national TV, which, again, the awareness of how far we've come in 16 years and the treatment and the 100% cure that he has at this time, you know, is medical technology. So it happens, you know.
You know, I think that any road to success starts with acceptance. And if I didn't accept the fact that I needed to do this, needed to go through this procedure, and needed to face the fact that I do have hepatitis C and I need to do something about it, it would have never got done.
Dan, would it be safe to say that there was a time in your life that you didn't accept saving your hepatitis C?
Absolutely.
I bet there's a lot of people out there as well who in similar spots. Maybe share some of your wisdom, how you went through to accept.
You know, the majority of my adult life, I was addicted to drugs and alcohol. And maybe about 6 or 8 years into my addiction, I found out I had hepatitis C. My primary care doctor constantly used to tell me, Dan, you got hepatitis. You got to quit drinking. And I didn't feel bad. I didn't feel sick. I wasn't jaundiced. I know plenty of people who were being associated with alcoholics. But it wasn't me. It wasn't me. I felt good. I didn't feel like I was sick. So there was quite a bit of denial, but not only that, but I didn't want to quit drinking. I didn't want to quit drinking because if I had to treat my hepatitis, I had to quit drinking. I wasn't ready to do that. So since I felt good and there was no symptoms, life went on. Mm-hmm. So when I got sober in 1999, after the bottom dropped out and I hit rock bottom and I had nowhere else to turn, I didn't know what I wanted or how to get it, I had to surrender. And surrendering to the fact that I had to accept the fact that I was an alcoholic. And when that happened, doors opened up. And I never looked back. First time in recovery. And 16 years later, here I am.
Sober.
Sober.
Hep C free.
Hep C free. So when I, 2 or 3 years into my sobriety, I started to take care of my health. I needed to live a better life since I was blessed with having a new life. And that's when I started investigating medication for the hepatitis. And back then, 12 years ago, the medication wasn't so good. The interferon and the daily medication I had to take every day. And at that time, the hepatologist I went to was talking about support groups and all sorts of things. But the side effects is what scared me. The side effects of the medication is what scared me. And I told my doctor, I says, I don't know if I want to do this. He goes, well, Dan, you got hepatitis. He says, you have minor cirrhosis, but you have hepatitis. You have to treat it. And I says, well, what if I wait a while? You're telling me there's all these new drugs are coming out. What if I wait a while? He says, well, that's your gamble. He says, but it's not going to go away. So my choice was to wait. Mm-hmm. My choice was to wait. And then 12 years later, I was starting to feel some symptoms. I was starting to feel tired all the time. I was starting to feel I had a chronic, severe itching problem on my legs. And so I'm thinking, well, this is all got to attribute to the hepatitis. So I knew there was new medications coming out, and that's when I went down to Northwestern. And from what you already know, that was the start of my treatment.
Yeah.
But I did finally, when I went to Loyola and they started to treat, they actually put my cancer in remission. I got on a transplant list right away because I was such a good candidate for transplant because I was healthy. I didn't have any other diseases. I wasn't diabetic. I didn't have any other cancers. And they kept telling me, you're a perfect candidate for this. So when they treated my cancer with a treatment called a TACE treatment, where they went out with a catheter through my artery and right into the liver and shot the tumor with chemo, they put it in remission one time. And it was only a temporary fix. So that was a good thing. That was a good thing. And so they put me on the transplant list, and I had to wait almost a year to get the liver.
And, you know, I don't think most people would think about this, but you actually know information about your liver, your new liver.
I do.
What can you tell us about your liver?
Well, when I got the call, the coordinator that makes these calls told me that he had an organ available for me if I can get down to the hospital. I mean, they can call at any time, any day, whenever one's available. So when they called, I kind of was taken by surprise. And again, maybe a little bit of fear kind of creeped in. And so I started asking questions. I said, well, where did this liver come from? She said, well, we can't tell you. Well, who did it come from? You know, she said, all I can tell you, it's a 26-year-old female. That's all we can tell you. And but they did. They also told me the town that the donor was from. So that's what I know. That's all I know.
What's that like?
Well, I got a 26-year-old organ, a female organ in me. So I'm grateful. It's, you know, I'm grateful I have a healthy liver.
Thanks to that person for being a donor.
Absolutely.
You might not be sitting right here in front of me.
The donor organization is tremendous, what they do and how they do it. It's just unbelievable. And so my social worker one time told me, she says, how do you feel about writing a letter to the donor family? And I said, absolutely. So I wrote a letter to the family. I haven't heard anything, but that's okay. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. The point is I just wanted to let them know that it wasn't all in vain that they lost a family member. Actually, the family member's still living.
Yeah.
Right here.
Looking back on your recovery, what kept you going?
Well, looking back on my recovery and accepting the fact that I had a new life, and I was learning things all over, or not all over, but I was learning things for the first time.
Like what?
How to live. How to interact with people. How to treat myself. How to treat others. I never did that before. You know, it was all about me when I was drinking and drugging. So just those things, and experience in nature for the first time. You know, I got involved at this place where I went to rehab called the Center, and I got involved in nature. I went out in bird walks and wildflower walks and looked at sunsets and watched the moon at night. All these things helped me live again.
Let me ask you a question. You were saying when you were in your addiction, you were all about you.
Yes.
But then when you had to learn to live again, you had to learn how to take care of you and be kind to you. Tell us the difference between the two of those things, right? When you're in your addiction, it's all about you. But then you had to learn how to take care of yourself and be kind to you.
Well, obviously it was all about me because of the selfishness, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts. Well, in my case, I was very selfish. I wanted what I wanted, and I wanted it now. And so it was all about me. It was all about what I can get from you and not what I can give you. And then having to learn about loving myself and accepting myself and how to treat others without selfishness, it was quite a transformation. So I learned those things in recovery. A lot of people don't, unfortunately. And a lot of people don't realize or don't have that awareness of how powerful this universe is and how powerful people are that could help you. And it doesn't work for them. So I had a rare opportunity to start over and to learn how to live, like I said, learn how to live again or the right way. So So that's the difference mm-hmm. in my life. And it hasn't stopped. I even 16 years later, it's still all about other people. It's all about gratitude and acceptance. It's all about waking up in the morning and putting your feet on the ground and say thank you. So.
And how would you say, you know, you put your feet on the ground and you say thank you and then you go through your day? How would you say thank you through your day? I mean, is it you've been sort of different opportunities with sobriety, with a new liver that doesn't have cancer and all these things. How do you live out that thank you?
To be responsible, to be compassionate, to be loving and kind, those are spiritual things. That is my spirituality. To do things for others, not to expect anything in return. To help another alcoholic, for instance, to help someone in need. That's the reward of life. That's what we can give. It's not about taking, it's about giving. And that's why I'm here today.
And you need part of that is speaking of relationship and relationship with others. Can you tell me a little bit about sort of the relationship with the woman sitting next to you right now and wherever you want to take that?
Well, you know, growing up and being addicted, I never had a relationship, or any relationships that I had were false and not real, selfish. And I never interacted with people. All I wanted was what I wanted. I didn't want any relationship. I didn't want to talk to anybody. That's what addiction does to you. It isolates you. So when I got sober and started to experience all the miraculous things that sobriety gives you, I started to learn how to have a relationship with people and how to accept the fact that we're all one. We're all connected. And when I met Sharon, it was almost like an instant relationship, like we've known each other for years. We were had the same things in common. We had the same philosophy on life. We loved the same things. It was like, oh my God, you know, this is it. I never knew people like that existed, you know. I never knew people like that were that caring and that loving. So when we met, we were soulmates. It was meant to be.
How about from you, Sharon? Tell me about anything you want to reflect
about on? About our relationship?
Anywhere you want to go.
Well, you know, there's a saying in the program, you got to give it away to keep it. And I think we're a team, and you know, we're equals, and like you said, I used to read books about what is a soul, and I thought that was after death. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until, you know, we have our relationship and a sober relationship that I was able to know that I didn't have to live in a dysfunctional relationship ever again. And when you love yourself first, that's not selfish love. That's loving yourself like the oxygen mask so you can give it away. If I was, you know, the old Sharon, the Sharon that I was years ago, I wouldn't have this relationship with this man, you know, and that equality and that nature of being in nature and being grateful for whatever we have rather than looking for the monetary gains or, you know, whatever. I think in these 16 years, you know, we have given away to so many different people that our lives have mattered. You know, we might not be on the front of a magazine, you know, we're not in the celebrity corner, but we know in our heart that we've helped people along the way to stay sober and to appreciate the littlest things in life, because they can be gone in a second, you know. And this whole experience with this liver, you know, I think we could have gone on our merry road, you know, and you know, for how many years, I don't know if it had gone untreated, but this just signifies, you know, another blessing that we are where we're supposed to be. You know, we were there for a reason, and that we need to spread the word and be grateful. We met at the center where he works. It's a nonprofit. It's a nonprofit. It has a chapel for weddings. It's a very family oriented. Has a farm on one side, the lodge on the side. Now a preschool that he helped build a few years back. And I walked on the grounds, and it was so. I just had this feeling come over me that it was sacred and God was there. You know, I'd see people walking and they're all smiling, and he's the maintenance man.
Can you talk to him instead of me?
What?
Say you instead of he?
Pardon me?
Can you say you instead of he when you're talking to him? Instead of answering me, can you
answer him? you know, we just started talking and walking in the woods, and, you know, the last thing that I wanted in my life was a relationship, believe me. and so we gave it to God, you know, and here we are.
Well, I got to tell you, you two are on the cover of my magazine, and the self-love, you know, it's... As we talk about it, it seems like a no-duh, but yet it's so hard for us mm-hmm. as humans. And I'm curious, knowing that that self-love was there for you to be able to accept love from your partner, as your partner was going through a life-or-death situation and a new organ and recovery, and you're caring for him, you're given a whole lot of love, right? How are you in that time, in that process, still today, but since, you know, 2013 and February of just this year, how are you giving yourself love, and how are you taking care of yourself as you continue to nurture your partner?
Well, I read my meditations every morning. I try to bookend my day with getting quiet and doing that, you know, long-term meditation is not always a daily thing that I'm able to do, but that quiet time in the morning and in the evening before I go to sleep. I have a great support system of women for my groups, and they were very supportive in, you know, telling me, you know, this texting and, you know, Facebook kind of comments. You know, I was very discreet. I never put anything out there, but they knew, you know, the people that needed, family and friends, were very supportive, you know, and reminding me, as I have reminded them in times of their need, you know, you are a strong woman, you know, God has blessed you, you will get to the other side, and I did, you know, but it was with that, you know, I didn't do it alone. Had a lot of support.
And you too, Dan, you had a lot of support. Tell us, you know, the doctors give you the drugs, they do the interventions, they're prescribed drugs and the interventions and procedures and such. My belief really is that's, you know, those are the physical things that they can do, but it's the family and it's the support and the love that really brings you to recovery. Can you talk a little bit about what you felt from Sharon in terms of what you needed, maybe didn't even know you need, that she gave, or something you'd like to say around that?
Well, I'm totally always grateful for my wife, for Sharon. And I don't know, maybe I still take things for granted. We've been together for 16 years, and sometimes you just do that, being a couple. But reality is that I would have never been able to do it without her, without her support, without her being there. Even if she didn't say anything, even if she just drove me somewhere, you know. But I'm blessed. I'm blessed for the relationship. I'm blessed for the support. And it's not only my wife and my children, but my friends and my coworkers, and like you said, the staff at the hospitals. You know, this wasn't an easy thing to do, and it wasn't all peaches and cream and very simple and to accept the fact this. There was actually a time when I was being treated for the hepatitis C with this new drug that came out. It was a 90-day therapy. And within 6 weeks, I was called in for the transplant, the first call that I got. And I actually told the guy on the phone, I said, I'm not ready for this. I still have hepatitis. My doctor said that he wanted me hepatitis-free going into this transplant. And I'm not, I still have hepatitis. I'm not ready for this. And I denied the organ. Hmm. I actually denied it. Obviously, the next day, my doctor's calling me. He says, what are you thinking? What's going on with you? And I said, well, I just feel like we're not on the same page. But we were. I just didn't know it. I was still in denial. And I think it was at that time he had the social worker call me and all these people to tell me their story and to tell me how this is proceeds and how I have to do this because of my health. And they actually coaxed me through it, and they made sense once. Maybe it was just the fact that I accepted it again. I don't know. But they actually talked me back into what I had to do. And it wasn't 2 weeks after that we did a test on the hepatitis virus, and I was free. I was free of the virus after 6 weeks.
When you denied the first organ, did they take you off the transplant list then? Okay, so they just keep you on the list.
Yes. Now, if you deny it 2 or 3 times, then they have to reevaluate. But just because it was the first time, no. Mm-hmm. And it was, a month or so after I got the second call. So they were still thinking about me.
And you were ready then?
I was ready.
What would you say was different? Could you identify what was different in those 4 or so weeks?
Well, I think once I got the denial, and especially denying the first organ, it gave me time to think. Mm-hmm. You know, it gave me time to reevaluate my life and what I had to do to keep living and to keep experiencing the miraculous things I experience every day.
So both of you have mentioned giving back and sharing in a message and awareness. Could you speak about what is it you want people to know? What can they learn from you and your experiences and your story?
That they're not alone. That there's always a good place to be. They can do this. They can get sober, if that's the fact. They can get healthy, if that's the case. And just sharing my experience from what I go through, it's a blessing. It's meant to be. I'm sure a lot of people think, well, you know, that's you. That's not me. But that's not the case. That is me. I am you. I had that disease. I had the disease of addiction. I had the disease of hepatitis C. I had liver cancer. And I found a way. I found a way to deal with it through the help of a lot of different people. But that's what it's all about. It's all about support and love and listening to people go through these experiences. So anything that I can give back, I get to keep. So that's what it's about for me.
And what's your message, Sharon?
As far as the transplant, as far as the...
Anything really, you know, what you've learned about the process, about hepatitis C and sort of the lack of knowledge, this message that you push forward.
Well, I think there's a stigma attached to it. Hep C is like, just recently as we began this process, there's been commercials on now about it. A lot of in the commercials showing different races, different genders. You know, this affects everyone. Mm-hmm. And keeping it in the closet, just like our addictions, keeping them in the closet is our worst thing that we can do. We need to be open. We need to find those avenues where there are answers. And this medication that is available to people today does not have the side effects of the medication 16 years ago. It is oral medicine, and like Dan said, for it to completely nullify the virus in 6 weeks is truly a miracle. So why not? You know, why not try it and be cured, you know, and live a long life? Because if you have it, it is going to eventually destroy your liver, you know. The doctors know that. We know that.
And you know, it's not as easy as maybe we come across as. I mean, it takes a lot. And if I didn't have insurance, I wouldn't even be here. Mm-hmm. This new medication that's out today has really complicated insurance companies because it's so expensive. It took 6 months for me to get it approved for this certain for this specific medication, but that was on the effort of my doctor, my hepatology team, to keep appealing and appealing and appealing and appealing. I mean, I don't know the politics about it, the insurance companies, but they do, and that's what they did. And they did it right, and yeah. They did what they had to do, and they finally got it approved.
Thank goodness.
You know, but it is very expensive.
It is.
Yeah.
So in our last few minutes, is there anything you want to say to each other? Maybe that you haven't said already, or maybe have, but...
Well, you really want us to cry now, right?
I mean, I'd like to... There's a lot of palpable love, and you can feel the connection. And as an observer who just gets a piece to see you, just a little piece of you guys... I'd love to just sort of be exposed to the love between you and hear what you say to each other.
Well, I'm very grateful today, and I'm very grateful for Sharon being in my life. And I try not to take things for granted between us. I try to help as much as I can and to receive. Receiving is a big part of this, too. To take praise and to take help when we need it. Without being selfish, and to accept that praise, and I do today, because of the miraculous experiences that I have experienced. I don't think I would ever do that or be here without the support and love of Sharon, and I'm totally internally grateful for that. And I love you, sweetheart.
I love you too. I am really blessed. And you know, we need to surround ourselves with like people, you know, and that's what we try to do. When we walk together into the building or into mindfulness on Sundays, you know, I feel that love. I feel that togetherness. I never would have dreamed that I would have a successful relationship with a man that I love that is not dependent on me, you know, that it is a equal relationship and selfless. I don't have to fix him. You know, I don't have to fix him. And, you know, our vows, we got married at the center in an old-fashioned Western wedding. We rode, he was Wyatt Earp, he was Wyatt Earp, and I was Josephine. And if you know that love story, you know, It was just like the best fun, you know, I have those pictures around the house all the time to remind me just how far we've come in our relationship. And you know, it's just like anybody else's life. You know, there's a lot of strife that's come into our life through children and money and la la la. You know, but together we have. Survived and come out on the other side and just to wake up, like Dan says, and be grateful every morning. Thank you, God, I woke up. You know, what can I do for you today? and continue, you know, and turn it over when a bad thing happens in at the beginning of the day. But yeah, we're truly blessed.
Well, and again, it's just sort of the blessing I've had for knowing you is just reflecting back to you the cycles that you've broken and the power of cycles and how strong they are. And so I just want to thank you for being brave and changing. You know, cycles are strong. We didn't talk about the families that you come from, but talk about the ways you've changed and then the impact to your family. So
thank you, Jill.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Jill.